And now, the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Let's start the show.
Welcome back to the Last Word on Habs podcast. I'm Connor LaPalme, and as always, I'm joined by Johannes Wielden. How's it going, Johannes?
Good morning, Connor. It's Sunday morning here in this part of the world, and I'm feeling slightly guilty for not believing in the Habs this week. Do you know what I'm referring?
Yeah, I'm pretty aware most listeners know what you're referring to, but if you'd like to elaborate, go on.
Well, I incorrectly predicted it might be a tough week for Habs fans. In Carolina, I didn't see them pulling it out. I was very worried about them playing the Leafs, given the offensive powerhouse that team is. I was wrong. The Habs looked great. Even when they didn't look great, they didn't stop skating. They didn't stop pushing. We are 5 days into the new season, and the Habs are undefeated.
Yeah, somewhat. But yeah. Yeah, from my end, I mean, look, I'm just trying to catch my breath because those two games were played at such a pace, which was fun to see for a viewer anyway. I'm sure Claude Julien, the last of his hair, was he's trying to rip it out because, you know, Julien likes to play. As much as he wants to open it up with his team, he does not want to see them giving up as many opportunities and chances and as they have.
But, Let's just say too many two-on-ones going the other way.
Yeah, but again, as a fan, it was a lot of fun to watch. I guess we'll start in Carolina, which, the Habs played, I think, a pretty good game, but we'll say uneven. I mean, it's the first game of the year, so you try not to overreact. The first period, I think, was played kind of evenly, although I think Carolina played a bit better. And, you know, they got that late first period goal. Then when they took a 2-0 lead in the power play early in the second, I was concerned because, you know, last year Carolina was a team that liked to suffocate teams out and play defensive. And I thought two goals, you know, even though the Canadians like to sort of run and gun, it might have been too much to ask. However, you know, I was right in that the fact that the Canadians were able to take advantage of some shaky goaltending from Peter Mrazek and were able to score three goals in the second period. And then, you know, the third period happened, which, you know, we'll get to. But, you know, before we get to that, let me hear what your thoughts were.
Well, I definitely agree the Tatar goal was a function of not great goaltending. I love the Kokkinemi goal, his first goal not in Montreal, as one of the commentators pointed out. But the patience he showed on waiting for Mrazek to commit and just popping in the other side was amazing. Love seeing Wheel get his first. Wheel was your pick as a sleeper, not to sleep on, to belabor the metaphor. But, you know, I guess going into the third period, and having the Habs up, it was a bit of a letdown to see Carolina tie it up and then, of course, win in the shootout, and you never know what's going to happen. But it was nice to see them not go down 2-0 and fall apart. This is going to be a team that's going to be fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think the same questions we had early in the season last year are going to still sort of ring out this year, as if they can keep up the pace. But, you know, we'll enjoy it for now. And, yeah, unfortunately, the third period was a bit of a disaster. You know, Carolina obviously was pushing to get the tying goal, but, I mean, the Habs looked at times lost, and maybe we'll get to it a bit later, but, you know, their defensive zone coverage and play left a little bit to be desired, if I'm going to be generous.
A lot to be desired, Connor, I think.
Well, I was trying to be generous, but yeah, a lot. But again, you know, they were able to secure a road point in the first game of the season. I think the 3-on-3 was a lot of fun, too, against Carolina. You know, again, the game was played at an incredible pace, which was fun to watch for the fans, and yeah. You know, Dougie Hamilton scores the only shootout goal, and Carolina was able to win. So they got to do their first storm surge of the season. It was obviously a disappointing way to end. I was, like I said, I was a bit frustrated with the way the third period happened and the Habs weren't able to hold the lead. But, you know, hiccups will happen, especially, you know, again, if we're based on last year. I think there was a stat that when Carolina was trailing after two periods last year, they were like, 2 wins or 3 wins and 22 losses and, you know, 3 whatever. It was like they only come back 2 or 3 times all of last year. So, but then again, you know, stats aren't in past results aren't indicative of future results. So,
but I do think, I mean, that's a talented team, and the way that Brindamore yes. coaches, it's all about fitness, right? You remember that yeah. story from last year where after they played their full game, they'd go and do their workout before they left for the night. And the idea yeah. being, you know, should they make the playoffs, they'd be in so much better condition than anybody else because they're doing their workouts after playing a full 60 minutes on the ice. And you definitely see that. It just seemed like they found another gear in the third period. And look, the 3-on-3 was amazing. And your boy, Yoel Armia, which everyone's calling Joel now, which is a, you know, just a sad state of affairs that we can't pronounce anyone's names correctly. But he was incredible. He just yes. kept on going. Ultimately, they lose in the shootout. By the time it gets to a shootout, it's really anybody's game, and it's who knows what's going to happen. But as you say, nice to get a road point and set them up nicely for the game on Saturday night, the first hockey night in Canada. NHL down here in the U.S., the NHL Network carried the broadcast for Hockey Night in Canada, which was interesting to watch. You know, the broadcast that I had grown up on an American network, sort of, except for the commercials, essentially the same. What did you make of the game last night, Connor?
Well, again, it was another fast-paced game. The Canadians were, I guess, fortunate to sort of draw Michael Hutchison, the Leafs' backup. I think this was the third Leafs' third game, and I think it was their fourth in three nights because I know they played back-to-back. So they got Michael Hutchison, which I think is a bit surprising. I'm not sure if Frederik Andersen was hurt. I don't think he was hurt, but, you know. And, you know, the Habs started off pretty quick. I think Max Domi got a goal less than 2 minutes into the game, which was a lot of fun. And then, you know, the Leafs kind of started to take over a bit. And, you know, Austin Matthews was doing Austin Matthews things. He looked really good. The Habs really struggled with that Toronto, I think it's their third line with Moore, is it Makhachev and Kerfoot? They were probably the best line in the game.
Oh yeah, period. That's I mean, they were Moore's incredible, and Kerfoot's got a great touch at the net. And that other, how do you pronounce his name?
I think it's Makhachev.
Makhachev, yeah. He is strong on the puck. He did. There was a great play where he bashed someone to the boards, turned around, got the puck, fed it out front for almost another goal.
Yeah, he said they got him from the KHL, and I think in the KHL he was like a 20-25 goal scorer. So he's, you know, he could be something, you know, and he looks like he might be something, which is, you know, a little bit scary if you're hoping the Leafs don't succeed, just because, you know, the whole thing with Toronto is they were very top heavy and their bottom two lines were going to be, you know, who knows. And if Makhachev turns out to be a player, that, you know, that's just another sort of more depth scoring that, you know, they don't necessarily need, but I'm sure they'll take. But for the game, the Habs, after they scored, you know, the first goal, Toronto ripped off four goals in a row. Montreal, you know, it was interesting because Hutchison looked shaky throughout the game, but it felt like the Canadians couldn't take any, couldn't get any good chances, which was frustrating as a Habs fan.
Well, certainly. The second period, though, I think it's important to point out, I mean, two of those goals were off rookie mistakes. And whether it was Fleury coughing it up, just making a bad pass on the boards, or Suzuki giving it up, both, I mean, rookies are going to rookie, and that was a good example of when you just have less time to do the right thing. And in both those cases, it was very clear something bad was going to happen.
Yeah, you're right. It was, I mean, the Fleury play was, I remember watching it at the time, just sort of like, what's he doing? Is he, I mean, I understand he was trying to make a breakout pass, which, I mean, the Habs breakouts all night were
bad.
An adventure. They were an adventure, say the least. Yeah. It was rough to watch. So I understand he was trying to kind of make a play, because I think Cale Fleury is one of the guys who actually has a decent breakout pass. But he, like, just threw it to Nate Thompson's feet. And then, you know, the next thing you know, it's the other way and in the net. So, but yeah, I guess those are growing pains you have to live with. But on top of that, the Canadians were kind of playing with fire, putting the Leafs to the power play.
So many penalties.
Five times?
Yeah, so many penalties. So,
and finally, in the third period, it kind of cost them when Nylander made it 4-1. And at that point, my wife was sitting next to me, and she was kind of watching the game, but also kind of watching something on Netflix on the laptop. And I kind of looked over to her and was going to sort of say, all right, so I guess we'll find something to watch, because, you know, I don't need to see. Because I thought, honestly, that it was going to sort of, they're at least going to probably pump in two more goals, and it was going to look a lot worse than maybe the game deserved to be. And then, you know, Jonathan Drouin gets, Drouin gets his first of the year off of, we'll say, it was a bounce, a lucky bounce, but you take them, doesn't matter. You don't, you know, they don't count how, they count how many. And the match just seemed to spark the Habs, and they ripped off four third-period goals in a row, and they were up 5-4. And it was kind of reminiscent of the game last year that kind of, I think, you know, retro, if you look back on it, kind of ended the Habs' playoff pushes when they had a 3-0 lead in Toronto, and then they gave it up and ended up losing 6-3. So it was nice to see the Habs kind of give a little bit of payback. You know, and they were up 5-4 with 4 minutes left. You know, Gallagher scored, Drouin, Petrie on a crazy play, which I'm sure we'll talk about, and Philip Deneau. And it was, you know, I couldn't believe what was happening. I was obviously excited. So I guess before we talk about the total end of the game, I mean, that Petrie play was pretty crazy. I mean, Habs are on a power play. He's got the puck. Kasperi Kapanen blocks the shot with a stick. His stick explodes. And instead of just dropping his stick, he throws it at Jeff Petrie, which, I mean, even as soon as I saw it, I'm like, I audibly said, you can't do that. And the refs
So people knew that you couldn't do that, but nobody seemed to know, including the announcers, what exactly the protocol was, because at some point they were like, anyone could take the penalty shot, and then it quickly became apparent that no, because Petrie had possession when that happened, he could take the penalty shot. I don't know how many times that specific thing has happened in the regular season, but it certainly seemed like a learning moment for all involved.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think anyone can take, but I think people might have been totally confused about exactly what to do. I mean, it didn't matter. Jeff Petrie scored on the breakaway or the penalty shot, so you know it didn't matter. But I'd seen a play like that before, and I think strangely enough, it was against the Leafs years ago. I think it was a power play, and I think Matt Sundin had his stick, it broke, and he kind of threw it at the guy with the puck and knocked it away. And even then, I was like, you can't do that. I think the bigger kind of after the game was Kasperi Kapanen saying, like, you know, this guy's been playing hockey for what? Let's say 20 years conservatively? Or, you know, 15 conservatively? And he's like, I didn't know that was a rule. I mean, come on.
Well, I'm going to be interested to see. I'm sure someone's going to write a think piece about it and look at the history of this. I mean, my memory of that rule is that you have to drop your stick. So if it breaks, you drop it immediately. And part of that is for player safety. Part of it is because, I don't know, just historically, as soon as it's broken, it can't be used to play at all in any way. So the fact that he, you know, because you could argue he was trying to throw it to the side and then it sort of twisted out of his hand. And it, but to say that he didn't know he couldn't do that is bizarre, to say the least. And
And I don't know if you caught Max Domi, because even going back to last year, Max Domi and Kasperi Kapanen seemed to have a thing, I guess we'll put it that way. And Max Domi had a nice little... they caught him on the bench yelling at him, and it was a nice kind of little.
Yeah, it was all over Twitter last night and into this morning. So that's going to be something to watch going forward, I think.
Yeah, and you know, I guess we'll talk. I'll get to it later, but yeah. So you know, the Habs are up. I think there's about 4.5 minutes left in the third. Leafs are able to tie it with what, just over a minute left after they pulled it. Literally, as the goalie's coming out of the net, you know. Nate Thompson blocks a shot, falls right to Austin Matthews, of course, and he's able to sort of bury it. You know, one thing before we go further, and we'll talk about it, I'm sure, more at when we talk about the overtime, but, you know, despite the fact that the Leafs got 5 goals, Carey Price played pretty amazingly in that game to keep them, alive, because obviously they came back to tie and take the lead. But, I mean, even before that, you know, to keep them sort of on life support, I mean, Price was kind of doing all he could do to sort of jumpstart the offense. And, you know, it was just unfortunate that kind of, you know, that it was a lucky bounce right to the wrong guy. Well, if you're Toronto, the one guy you want the puck on the stick. And, you know, for Montreal, obviously, it's the least the guy you want, you know. But, so the game, but even before overtime, I think the Canadians had a couple of chances to win the game before overtime. But anyway, into the extra frame, into the 3-on-3, which was, another entertaining period. A lot of back and forth. Again, Carey Price made a lot. He made what he stopped at least three breakaways in overtime, I think. I mean, I know he stopped Marner. He stopped Tavares. He stopped Tavares twice. Anyway.
Amazing. Carey Price is unbelievable. He was amazing, and he was obviously amazing in the shootout, stopping the, you know, three top Leafs. And I mean, look, again, once it gets to shootouts, it's like, you know, you're just, it's entertaining, but it's hard to impugn much meaning from, you know, from that setup. But of course, it's exciting to see Price stare down some of the top scorers in the division. And well,
they looked kind of lost. I mean, especially Matthews and Marner was like, not for anything, but those didn't seem like dangerous shots.
No, they shot too soon, and I think what, if you talk like to Leafs,
I'm sure. Sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was just gonna say, if you're a Leafs fan, you're gonna say, look, they played three games in four nights, and blah, they were tired, and blah blah blah. And if you look at the zone time in the third period, I don't know, Toronto had very very little. Now, obviously, they scored when they pulled the, but they sort of collapsed in the third period, and the Habs were just sort of able to pour on the pressure and make it work. So, you can look at it from a bunch of different. You know, I don't know how much you want to take from that specific example, but the general point that I think that we can get to here is this is a team that skates, that pushes, that takes chances, and is allowed to. And if they keep on being rewarded, Claude Julien, despite all his, you know, defensive predilections, and I'm sure we'll see that come back at some point in the season, is going to have to respect that the fact that this is a team that can come back when they need to.
Yeah, it was, it was good. It was a lot of good signs. A lot of fun, which I think is, you know, something that I think, you know, building off of last year, which I think is a good thing, because the Habs were, for the most part, a fun team to watch as well. You kind of like to keep that going. I will say, though, in the overtime, the Canadiens had a power play, and that power play made me want to, I'll kind of rip my hair out. It was
I still think they're trying to set up Weber for the shot. Like right now, this moment, they're feeding him again.
Yeah, and he's going to keep drifting more and more to the side of the net.
I mean, that last one was from the red line. I don't understand what he was doing there. But look,
But even Petrie went over there at one point. I'm like, why are they taking the same shot from? I get you want the goalie to move. But if everyone knows that's where you're going,
especially with a right-handed goaltender who catches right-handed, right? Because like that whole, I don't know if they were trying to go blocker side and make him drift over to one side and put it in the other side. I don't know, but. I think, you know, that shot is a weapon and you want to rely upon it sometimes, but mostly you need quick passes. And even on the run, like the big setup for the big blast from the point, we're not seeing that as much anymore. It's because everyone knows how to play against it. So it's just like, I mean, you're more of a football fan than I am, but like if everyone knows you're running, you got to throw it. And if everyone's expecting,
you got to find a more creative way to run it than just handing it off and, you know, going to
hope for the best. Yeah.
I mean, it's just like, I was getting so mad because you try it maybe twice. Cause obviously Weber has a shot that's hard enough that, you know, it could find a hole or it could trickle through. I get it, but they tried it like four times and no one else seemed to want to even do anything else. And it's just kind of like, what's the point here? Why? It's not working. Do something else. Or, I mean, God forbid, put Weber back at the top of the point so he can shoot straight on and he can actually hit someone and go in, as opposed to, you know, the angle he was at. I mean, he's got a great shot, but he's not Alex Ovechkin who can rip those and rip them accurately. Because, I mean, another thing I had a bit of an issue with Weber was when he got a bunch of chances, he jumped into the play a lot. And I think he hit the net with one shot, but he had a ton of chances and they kept missing the net.
Yeah.
And I was kind of, I mean, it doesn't, they won, and I'm being hypercritical, I get it, but, you know, hit the goddamn net. Well, look, just being so annoying, especially when you have a backup goalie in there. You got to hit the net.
Yeah, well, I think more is that you want to shoot low, right? Because that's where you're going to get deflections and rebounds. But I was happy to see Weber pick up the pace, and I think as far as defensemen go, you know, he played really well, and I thought overall Petrie played really well in both the games. I think we're going to have to contend, though, with the Ben Chiarot. I mean, this is two games where he has not looked good at all. And I'm also afraid to say Victor Mete did not look particularly good. I didn't notice him as much last night, but I did not think he had a very good game on Thursday. And I don't know. You know, we're talking about half of that D-core now, which seems a little shaky at best, and I don't really know what the move is. But if you're going to play run and gun, it means that you're going to need to have solid D, because you cannot rely upon you're just not going to be able to rely upon Ben Sherratt trying to, you know, taking runs at people from the dot and not playing as well down low as he needs to, because two or three times now look, Toronto's a good team, but the reality is there are a lot of defensive errors, and not just to pick on the rookie mistake, but overall that D-core looked a little confused.
Yeah, and we kind of touched on it, but them trying to, especially if Toronto was playing a high pressure game, they could not get the puck out of their own zone, especially in the second period. I mean, I'm sure the Leafs were obviously pushing, but it was like the only time they seemed like they were able to get it out was when Toronto had to go off for a line change. I mean, it was, they kept trying to like get it out, which led to icings and things like that. And it was a bit of, and you know, this was an issue last year, and it seems like it's so far, you know, these things maybe can be corrected with coaching and scheme and strategy, but so far it seems like, it almost seems like the team has taken a step back in that regard, I should say. And obviously the team looked, overall they've looked, you know, as good as last year, I think. But, you know, I guess this leads into our winners and losers of the week. I think, you know, we've kind of touched on our losers, but we'll get to it a little more formally. But for now, we'll go with the winners. Johannes, you can lead off here.
I am going with my fantasy pick, and also the much maligned Jonathan Drouin, who I thought had a gritty, tough game. I don't really count that as a goal last night. I mean, we'll take it, certainly. But I think what I like is he's playing a lot tougher. He's skating hard. I watched a couple times when the puck was like 4 feet away, and you were like, is he going to go for it? Is he going to slouch? And he put his head down and skated hard toward it. And I don't know that we saw that very much last year. And I'm really hopeful that this means he's figured out that in order to earn the time to be offensively creative, he's going to have to play hard away from the puck and get there to create chances. And I just was super impressed with his play. He may not have lit it up on the score sheet this week, but I thought he played great and answered some of the critics, including myself.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to agree. He was it's hard to disagree because, yeah, he was easily their best forward, I think, in Carolina by a country mile. And I think he was probably one of their two best forwards against Toronto. I mean, we saw it when Julien was trying to shake things up. The lines went into the blender a bit, and Drouin got bumped up. And, you know, that line got two goals. So, you know, Gallagher got one and Drouin got one. So, it's, you know, I don't know, Gallagher. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Drouin was making an impact with whoever he was with, and it was good to see. And that's, you know, I think this is the player people thought the Montreal was getting, and I don't know. You know, hopefully he can sustain this, you know, grit and this determination and this drive and this, you know, we'll just call it what it is, motivated play throughout the season. I'm hopeful. You know, I think people can kind of get down on a player and they kind of keep him down. So when he has a good game, there's a bit of, you know, people kind of take it with a grain of salt. I'm hoping he can continue this play. I'm hopeful. And I think he just seems a little different on the ice. Or even last year when things were going good, he didn't look as tenacious as he did the last two games, which is, I think, a positive sign. So, yeah, it's hard to argue. I think everyone, even on Twitter, I don't think anyone had a bad thing to say about the game of Jonathan Drouin the past week. For me, I'm going to go with Jeff Petry. You know, he had that penalty shot goal. And I know the defense wasn't playing terrific, but he just seemed at ease, calm, making smart decisions when he had to. And, you know, he's the one guy on the team, I think, that has a comfortable breakout pass. And he right now is kind of sidled with a bit of a, as we'll discuss, I'm sure, a bit of an anchor in Ben Sherratt. But Petrie's still finding a way to be effective. He's jumping up in the play a lot. He's using his skating. I think a lot of people were worried that, you know, last year was a career year, myself included. and maybe he won't be able to sort of replicate his play. However, it seems like so far he's playing just as he did last year. You know, smart, offensive, and responsible, which, you know, it's all you can really ask for the Canadians, what their only real sort of puck moving defenseman, if we still want to use that term. So yeah, I'm going with Jeff Petrie.
Hard to disagree with that. I mean, mostly because he played a ton of minutes, as you say. And I just think he doesn't make a ton of mistakes. I mean, the play that we saw on the shootout was a little just odd all the way around, but in some ways that felt like a reward for a lot of hard work away from the puck. So hard to disagree.
Yeah. So I guess we'll go into the negatives. There are losers of the week. The losers is a bit of a harsh term, but you know, winners and losers, it's just the way things are in life and sports. I'll let you start, although I think we're going to land on the same player, but I'll let you start.
Well, I'm not picking on the rookies the first week of the regular season, but I expected a little more out of Ben Chiarot. Obviously not offense. That's not his bag. But I was surprised at some of the decisions I saw him make. I felt he was out of position. I don't know that he took care of his check down low enough, and he made some questionable passes at best. And I think that Canadians thought they were getting a little bit more of a solid player. Now, anyone can have a tough couple of games, but he didn't play well enough to justify, I think, the belief that he was going to bring some stability to that blue line.
Yeah, I mean, everyone saw him as an upgrade on Jordy Benn, which I think he still can be. And yeah, your point about it being two games into the season, you know, anyone can have a 2-4-5 game stretch where things aren't going well. But yeah, I just saw too many mistakes. And like you said, it's out of position, taking himself out of the play, not obviously making crisp enough passes. And although that's not his bread and butter, you still need to be able to do that kind of thing. You know, he was paired with Shea Weber a lot on the penalty kill, which wasn't, I don't think, it didn't look great. You know, Carolina got, well, they didn't get two goals, but their tying goal was, you know, the penalty just ended. I think Kokkinemi was serving. I mean, another thing we'll get to is how many freaking 20 men on the ice penalties the Habs are going to take this year. But, you know.
Two for two.
So it's just, you know, it's people thought we were getting more than Jordy Benn. And I don't, right now I think he's less than. And, you know, already we've heard things about how, you know, in Winnipeg they played a man-to-man system and now we're playing the zone. You know, all the stuff we heard with Carl Alzner, and if this is going to be a thing with these players, I mean, I don't know. I hope not. But, yeah, it was a little – concerning is not the word because, yeah, it's too early in the season. But disappointing because you figure on a new team, you're going to want to sort of show some stuff. And I think these are two games he'd like to sort of have a mulligan on.
Well, I was just going to say, I mean, I do think there is something to the whole man-to-man zone coverage because I don't know if you remember, I did a bit of a deep dive on all that stuff I went and looked through like how they play and why it's so difficult when you're used to playing one way to switch and think less about where the player is and more about the quadrant of ice that you're supposed to cover. So look, I want to give him a few more games to try and adjust, but I our friends at TSN 690 have been like, don't tell me about that. I don't want to hear about it. But I mean, it is a thing because it changes a lot of ways how you play and how you see the game. Play 3 or 4 years, you know, where all you got to worry about is the man. And now suddenly you got to worry about in a general area. That's going to change how you approach the game. It's going to mean you're out of position.
No, I get that there's obviously a learning curve. I just meant more that it was something we had sort of all lived through with Carl Alzner, where you kept expecting it to get better, and it never got better. So that's just the only thing is, you know, I think people hearing that, you don't want to get the fatigue of that already. And, of course, there's going to be an adjustment. No one's saying there won't be. But, you know, again, these are also professional athletes. And they should sometimes be able to adjust better. And, you know, adjusting to a new system, obviously there's going to be hiccups. I don't disagree. I just think there were too many hiccups for, I think, most people's liking the last two games. That's all. And that's why you hear about, well, he played man-to-man as an excuse. I'm like, yeah, sure, there's going to be hiccups. He's going to obviously instinctively want to follow a guy. But, I mean, it happened way too much.
So who's
that,
your,
I think, is...
Is your loser of the week also Sherratt or what?
It was going to be Sherratt. I mean, obviously, I think it was hard not to pick Sherratt for anyone. I'm going to go with Mete. We touched on it a bit.
Yeah.
We spoke about Mete in our preview about how, you know, there's a bit of pressure, more pressure on him because, again, he's still in this top pair role. He's with Weber. Can he handle it? We saw against Carolina, against a bigger physical team, he did not look good. I mean, I would argue that that pair didn't look great against Carolina. Toronto was a bit better, but I think Toronto's a bit easier team. We spoke about it for him to play against because they're more of a finesse team. However, he did still have some iffy play. You know, he's sort of on that line, on that pairing to be the skating and the puck moving, if you will. And, you know, it seemed like we saw more of Weber doing that, which, you know, which is a good sign because Weber can, I think, can do it better than people think. But, you know, Victor Mete is supposed to be the one doing that, and we didn't see it. And, you know, hopefully it's just like for Ben Schrott, hopefully it's just a little blip and it's just a weird slow start, because if Victor Mete somehow has a regression, you know, another guy I don't think that had a very good week either was Brett Kulak. And, you know, we don't need to see, you know, someone like Brett Kulak getting bumped up to playing with Shea Weber, you know, like we did last year.
But I will say they did seem to be mixing up the D partners last night. I did notice there were a couple of times when it seemed as though Mete was not playing with Weber. And it'll be interesting to see, because Julian himself has said that, you know, in different game situations, we might see different combinations. And it's going to be...
Well, he said Weber and Sherratt, which, I mean, you know, hold your breath.
It reminds me of Tony Marinaro with Jordy Ben. You can't do that! It's going to be interesting to see, but I think it's very clear early on. The Canadians can score. They can skate.
Yes.
We do not have, I think, a strong enough defensive core. And it's not just that they didn't play well. It's just that we don't have the talent right now on that blue line. What we've come to expect, and we're going to need to do a little better. And I don't know whether that's going to be a trade. I don't know whether it's going to be, you know, if there's some secret ninja move that can be made either from what is the situation? I mean, they can't bring anybody from the KHL at this point, right? You've had to have done that in the off season.
I don't think Romanov is eligible.
No, Romanov's out. He can't do anything till next year. But are there any other? I just find it intriguing how teams are able to find. I mean, whether it's Gusev in Jersey or the Maple Leaf we were discussing earlier, whose name escapes me, Mida.
Oh my God, we were just talking about him, Mikhailov, maybe. Anyway,
yeah, that's close. I think we're gonna get to know his name though, because I think he's
I agree.
He's gonna be someone that's gonna be able to make that jump, because a lot of KHLers come over and really just can't hack it, and we've seen that a couple times. Montreal's taken a couple flyers; it hasn't really worked out. It's always fascinating to me when teams do that and are able to make that difference. But I don't know that we have anyone in Laval that's ready to step up. Josh Brook obviously is the next one on the depth chart, but I don't know that he's ready. It's clear though, something needs
to. We want to have another rookie on the blue line.
Well, right. Yeah, I think you're right.
I mean, it's not like these are like, you know, and I think Cale Fleury's done well, but I mean, for the most part, anyway, I mean, based on training camp and the two games, he's done pretty well, even though he had a rough time last night. You know, it's not like either him or, Brooke were like top prospects. And not to say that doesn't mean they won't develop into anything great, but, you know, if you get drafted later in the draft, you need more seasoning, right? And maybe he can be a shot in the arm. I mean, we've seen it before with guys coming from the NCAA. You know, late in the year, we saw it, you know, in Colorado, we saw it with Mahar. He came from the Frozen Four, jumped right in, and was a key contributor for the Avalanche in the playoff run.
He's the real deal, I think.
It's possible. Yeah, but it's possible. But the only thing is, you don't necessarily want to start the season with, like, two rookies. I mean, you could, but it sort of says, you know, this is going to be a growth year.
Exactly. I think that's right. And so what that, I think, means is that, you know, we're going to be looking at a trade. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. There's lots of mill for the grist, you know. So, look, I'm just looking at the schedule for the week ahead. So we are first back-to-back, Wednesday night against the Sabres, Thursday night against the Wings, and then something very special is going to happen on Friday, on Saturday, October 12th.
Well, do we want to build up to that?
Let's build up to it. Let's leave our listeners in suspense. So
yeah.
The Sabres team is an interesting mix, right? I mean, a lot of people were expecting them to take a jump last year. They didn't. They are projected to be a lot better this year. They won a big game last night. Yeah, how about it? What do you think about Wednesday night?
I don't know. It's going to be tricky. I mean, these division games are always interesting. Buffalo so far looks like a better team. They beat Pittsburgh. They're 2-0 right now. They beat Pittsburgh on was it Wednesday or Thursday? Thursday, and then last night they trounced the Devil 7-2. I'm sure your little guy's been pretty happy with what's going on.
Yeah, he's, oh man, we're having some sport team challenges right now over here. My
just
son,
gonna get worse.
My son came home the other day and announced that he now liked the Patriots. And I seriously considered, you know, what is the right call in that situation? I don't know. It's not good.
How old is your little guy?
He is 6.
See, the only thing I can say that's good about that is, you know, Tom Brady, I think, will be retired by the time he's really kind of going to get into it.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean? Like, he's 6, right? So, I mean, you like sports, but he's not watching football all Sunday.
Well, we're in Vermont, right? So all his little buddies are Patriots fans because that's Patriots been dominate for a decade now. And so
and you're in the – yeah. Anyway, enough about football. it's going to be a good game. I think it'll be another fast-paced game. I think Buffalo, if they can get all their guys going, because, I mean, there's talent on that team. I think it's hard to argue that there's a lot of talent on that team. And if they can get going, which is what people have been expecting from them for at least the last 2 years – they could be a dangerous, frisky team to, you know, have to worry about. I think they have some issues. I think, I mean, are they still running with Carter Hutton in nets?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know what the division of duties has been.
Sorry, I know this is maybe we should be better prepared, but you know, whatever. But
yeah, we're out of practice. It's been a little while.
It's true. So I mean, the goaltending is, you know, always a bit of a question mark, right? It's always, yeah, Carter Hutton's their guy. At least he played last night. So, I mean, he was pretty good last year, but there's a reason why he's sort of was a journeyman. I mean, he's not like he's a young kid, right? He's 33, so he's not developing into anything more than he already is. So I think part of that is, you know, the Sabres are going to go as far as their goaltending, and I think if he has a year kind of like I think they're a little comparable to Carolina in that I think they're a very good team, but their goaltending can be shaky. If they can overcome it or coach around it, I think they'll be good. And if, you know, Carter Hutton decides to have a career season, I think it could be good things for them. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, it's going to be fun, I think, for sure. I think it's good that the Habs are starting off with a bunch of at least a couple of division games. It's fun to get the division rivalries going. On top of the obviously newfound Sebastian Aho feud that they have with the Carolina Hurricanes,
right? Well, the blue line on Buffalo is what always interests me. I mean, Jack Eichel's amazing to watch, but just the talent they have in Buffalo on the blue line. And I there was some talk of there being a trade, perhaps to shore up some of their scoring in Boston. That doesn't seem to have happened just yet, but, you know, Darlene is obviously his second year in the league and obviously is, it's crazy early right now to be worrying about point leaders, but he's setting up lots of goals and obviously 7-2 last night against Jersey. They're going to be coming in hot and interested. So it's going to be fun to watch Wednesday night. Thursday, the next night, we got the Wings. So the first back-to-back this week. The home opener in Montreal. And so Detroit, I think we'd agree, is a rebuilding team. It's not 100% clear where they are in that process. But Steve Yzerman back.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they're hoping for a kind of a turnaround like he did for Tampa Bay.
That takes time, though, and so
Yeah, exactly. I know he had said a lot of things where he wanted to be more competitive sooner, but we'll wait and see. I don't think they have the players just yet to be that competitive. But you know, I mean, they played their first game last night. They beat Nashville 5-3, so maybe it's a sign of good things. But yeah, I think we can all both agree that Montreal should be able to take care of business. I think last year they kind of owned the Red Wings in a pretty major way. So, you know, I expect more. I mean, maybe I'm not expecting as many like 7-2 thrashings, but, you know, I think the Canadiens should be able to take care of a team that's, you know, starting a rebuild, which means I think they still have further down to fall.
So I definitely think the Habs are going to be in tough against Buffalo on Wednesday. I think they should be able to win their home opener against a weakened Red Wing team on Thursday. Are you with me so far on that?
Yes.
So that brings us to Saturday.
Yeah. The
blessed event.
Champions.
Yeah, the Stanley Cup champions at home, Montreal's first home game on Saturday night, and you've seen more Habs games, I think, than I have at home, but there's something special about a Saturday night in the Bell Center.
Yes, there is.
And this week, I will be in attendance.
There you go.
So the plan is... Yeah, I have my early morning hockey game, and then I coach the little guys, and then my buddy and I are driving up. We're going to – the plan is to get a poutine every hour in the afternoon, have a couple brewskis, and then go for our pregame nap. Just have a little downtime, and then and then get there early and to soak in the soak in the full atmosphere. It's actually a group of 20 from Vermont. These are all sort of hockey buddies, and we play in various leagues together. And one guy managed to get a bunch of tickets at a reasonable rate, which kind of blew me away. But there's going to be a big contingent up, and so so I've been hassling you for poutine recommendations because the plan just periodically, like every, I don't know, hour and a half to just load up on another poutine. And so basically our constitution come Saturday morning is going to be 50% beer, 50% cheese curds, gravy, and fries.
Those are some bathrooms I'm not going to want to go around. But you'll definitely be able to find your share of poutine. I guess before we get to our food block here, we'll talk about the hockey game and then we'll get to your
priorities, Connor. Priorities.
I know. Well, you're right. Food takes priority over all. But quickly, the Blues are 2-0, defending Stanley Cup champs. I think the team like St. Louis will cause the Habs problems just because of their size and skill sort of combination. I know it's a Saturday in Montreal, and you hope for good things, and they can happen. But you know, I don't imagine the Habs are going to be able to really. They might be competitive, but I think St. Louis is just going to be too much in terms of, like I said, size and skill. And they're going to sort of rub out the Habs' best players because they're going to be able to sort of take them out along the boards and limit their ice and space.
Well, I think the biggest thing is what you said first is around the size question, because I don't know that we have an answer for in Montreal for the big teams. And I am curious to see, because one answer is you just outskate them. But what we've seen so far is that when teams can slow down the play and really get heavy on the body, along the boards and in front of the net, Montreal just can't seem to find an answer. Now, it's early, but I'm thinking about last season as well, when I think down the stretch that sort of became more of an issue. I am going with a Habs win.
I hope so.
Only because I'm going to be there, and I really think that my presence has a strong impact, not only on how the Montreal Canadiens players play, but how the Blues, I think they're going to feel my animosity and sort of annoyance at them, and I think they're going to like back off a little bit. So I'm going for a 2-1 this week, 3 games, 2 at home. I'm hoping the Habs continue. And look, the big thing with all of this stuff is that it's way too early to get too excited or down about anything.
Yeah.
But you want to establish good trends. That means skating, being creative, when you get down, not hanging your head, but working twice as hard. And I think two games in, we've seen flashes of that, especially last night. And I think we're all hoping that that's going to continue. So,
yeah, I think, you know, it's like I said, Saturday night at the Bell Center. I think it'll be important for the Habs to come out quick. I think, you know, I think earlier in the game is when they can really sort of take advantage of their speed. You know, you kind of catch them off guard. I think as the game wears along, the Blues are going to try and slow it down, obviously. But, you know, if Montreal can keep pushing the pace, like you said, like they kind of did. I mean, even Carolina, who's a bigger team, although I wouldn't say they're as heavy as St. Louis. But, you know, Montreal's still able to find ways to use their speed and take advantage of things. So they got to kind of use that game against Carolina as a template and just keep moving their feet. They can't afford to take, you know, anything for granted because the St. Louis, we saw, obviously, winning the Stanley Cup. They're, you know, they're good enough to take advantage. And I hope your St. Louis Juju is going to, you know, throw them off their game.
I'm confident. I'm confident it is.
I like it. All right, so now the important part, the food. You guys are only in town for what, like 12 hours? Like
so it's so the challenge Sunday? Is it's we host Canadian Thanksgiving on Sunday, and I can't leave my long-suffering wife to be in charge of cleaning the house, making all the food, do all the stuff. I do the majority of cooking at home, and so we definitely want to be home early enough so that I can be useful around the house. So I think the plan is to go up as early as we can on Saturday. I want to hit some sports stores. I don't know. Are you familiar with Graph Skates? Do you know what I'm talking about?
It's a brand.
It's a Swiss company, and they a lot of refs swear by Graphs, and I think anybody who skates as much as referees do knows something. But they're actually the only skate company making skates in Canada. And so that appeals to my political side in terms of actually living in a country where we build things, not just shipping them in for wherever. But the problem is they're very specific on their sizing, and I have weird feet. So part of our day is going to be my buddy's looking for some sticks. I want to try on some Graphs and figure out what fits. I'm all set on my skates right now, but, you know, thinking forward, planning ahead. And then, then there's the poutine, the regular injection of poutine and gravy that needs to happen. But I think Saturday will be a moderately early brunch and getting on the road so I can be useful at home. So you have sent me a few ideas here. I'm being hassled because I'm from Canada. Everyone then assumes that I know
everything about Canada.
And my experience in Montreal is shaking my fist at the traffic and swearing using all the French words I know. So that's basically my experience. But you've talked to me about the pool room.
Yeah, Montreal pool room. Patati patata.
Okay.
And Chez Claudette. Those are good for like...
We want to hit all of those.
The thing about Montreal and the poutine places is most of them... I mean, there's the Banquise is another one. It just does poutine.
Okay.
It's kind of close to where you're staying. Okay. It's a little bit far, but the only thing about the Banquise is it's kind of popular, so it might be busier. These ones might be a little less busy.
Okay, I like that.
Like the Montreal pool room, Chez Claudette, they're called Casse-Croûte, which means it's like it's also got another Montreal staple, which is the steamy hot dog.
Oh, the steamy. So yes, I've heard about this. Yeah.
So it kind of comes all together with that. Because you're staying, from what I gather, you're staying near Place des Arts.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're near St. Laurent Street, which is actually better for you in terms of, like, better, less chain, less...
real Montreal, let's call it.
Less touristy sort of spots. However, I mean, if you're on the Bell Center and you want to put in for whatever reason, you know, if you want to have one every hour, you know, you can stop in it. They have, like, they're called La Belle Province or Belle Pros.
Okay.
They're hot dog chains. But they're Quebec chains, so, you know, you'll be able to get a pretty half decent one there. I'm not going to say it's the best poutine ever, but it's good enough.
So let me tell you let me tell you what we're dealing with here in Vermont. A lot of restaurants will sell poutine, and basically it's like warmed over fries with shredded mozzarella cheese.
Oh God, just stop.
And like it's not the great gravy. I'll just tell you that right now. It's way too thick and clumpy.
The key thing about it's weird, right? Because everyone, if everyone in Quebec I mean, I'm gonna say this right now. I'm not a huge poutine guy. The ones I like, I really like, but I won't just eat it anywhere. I mean, I would say some of the best poutines in Quebec are at actually like ski hills.
Yeah, Eastern Townships, right? Hill.
Exactly, but you're obviously not going to a ski hill.
No, yeah.
But it's all about, the key ingredient that people seem to get lost on, especially in the States, is the squeaky cheese.
Yes, it's all about the cheese curds. It's key. It's essential.
And even just having, like, you can go to the supermarket here and you can just buy them like that and you just pop them in. And, like, we call them, the cheese curds, we call them squeaky because when you chew on them, they squeak.
Yeah.
A bit. So that's, yeah, as soon as you said mozzarella cheese, I'm like, what is that? No, the place like the Banquise or at some place people get creative with the poutine. Like, I know there's obviously the classic, you know, cheese fries gravy. But, you know, place people can do their own thing. Like, I'm sure the Banquise, they have like a Mexican style poutine. They have like a breakfast poutine.
Yeah, popular, smoked meat poutine and what else? Yeah, I mean,
Italian style. So, I mean, you can get creative, but if you want a traditional one, you need the cheese curds at the very least. The mozzarella is just not going to work.
It's definitely not going to work. It's wrong.
And because you guys are close to St. Laurent, you want to get some Montreal smoked meat.
Schwartz's, baby. I know Schwartz's. I know that much because I did live in Ottawa for a while, and so yeah, I was well informed about all of that, the Schwartz, the situation. But so let's talk about. I can't imagine that we're going to be hungry after eating poutine every hour starting around noon.
Don't eat at the Bell Center.
That's not going to happen. But tell me about MKT.
Oh, it's a restaurant. I mean, it's obviously a little pricey. As you said, if you want to go for a nice meal, it's not far from the Bell Center. It's a nice restaurant. It's Italian, but they do a little bit of everything. The food's like, I find the food's really like amazing.
Really?
I've been there a couple times with my wife. We went there for our anniversary once. My uncle actually got introduced to it by my uncle, who he has season tickets. But yeah, we had my cousin's, they do all right. And we had my cousin's, she graduated dentist school, and so we had our graduation party there, and the food, like, even for a big group like that, it was like the food was really, really, really good.
Okay,
so if you guys are up for that kind of thing, I don't know, 20 people might be a little tricky.
Got you.
If you want to get to the Bell Center early enough, they have a kind of a sports bar there called, I think it's 1909.
Yep.
It's enormous. The thing is, last time I went to a hockey game, we tried to show up at like 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. Go down there, grab a quick bite, and then go to the game. But it was already, they said they were full. So you might want to get there a little bit early on a game night.
Okay.
Because, you know, the convenient thing is it's at the Bell Center, right? So you just come up and walk into the game. But, yeah, I mean, around the Bell Center, there's a lot of – the tricky thing is, I mean, you know, you're going to find, like, you know, there's going to be, like, a McDonald's and a restaurant like Baton Rouge, which is, you know, like a chain – wannabe kind of rib joint. It's not.
How do you feel about Baton Rouge? I mean, most of the restaurants I know about are based on who advertises on TSN 690, and that's not usually the best way.
I used to work at a Baton Rouge as a bartender years ago. I don't mind it. It's not the best restaurant in the world. It's obviously far from the worst. But I mean, if you're in a city, like, I think the idea is in Montreal, I think it's a bit of a foodie kind of place, and I used to have this argument with my wife when we would go to New York. Apparently, one time she went to a restaurant, and she really liked it with her friends. But I was like, "It's a chain restaurant. We can go to this restaurant anywhere USA.
Right.
I'm in New York City. I want to go to we're going to this whatever anywhere but
yeah,
a restaurant.
Yeah, for
Times
sure.
Square. So that's. I mean, look, it's not like there's Baton Rouge. It's not like there's 1,000 Baton Rouges. I think there's like 4 or 5. I personally, it's like I said, I work there. I don't hate it, but to me, it's just meh. There's a place not too far called Beer Market. It's part of, like, I don't know if you know what Cara is.
I don't.
It's a company. They own like Harvey's, Second Cup. Anyway, it's a big company that owns a bunch of restaurants, and it's part of that. It's nice.
What's it called? Beer?
Beer Market. B-E-I-R Market. There's a couple in Toronto. It's not bad. It's like, I'm trying to think of things that are walking distance to the Bell Center. On Mountain, there's a pub called the Old Orchard Pub.
Oh, the Old Orchard.
Right. It's pub fare. So, you know, you're getting what you're getting there. There's McKibben's Irish Pub, which is on Bishop. It's a little bit, I'd say it's about maybe a 10-minute walk, but it's, you know, maybe a bit less, but it's close enough. Just tricky because I haven't been downtown a ton, just because, as you like to point out, the traffic, and there's, get used to the orange cones because there's construction everywhere. So, you know, for someone like me to go downtown sometimes, it's a bit, you know, you got to think about, you know, if you want to sit and figure out what, you know, anyway, sitting in the orange cones is frustrating.
Yeah.
What else is there? I mean,
dude, this is first of all, let me just say, this is all excellent information. Very, very helpful. I'm writing this down as we speak. And listeners out there, if you're listening and you're like, no, those guys need to go here, reach out on Twitter. Let me know. Give me a heads up because I'm certainly happy to take any and all advice at this point.
And if you have a chance to grab bagels, I mean, I don't know if you guys are driving up yourselves or if you're going to be in a bus, but if you can get yourself to Fairmont Bagel.
Fairmont. Okay. I know. I definitely know.
St. Viateur. I'm sorry. Okay. I can't. St. Viateur. There's Fairmont as well.
Okay.
St. Viateur. Also because, St. Viateur is the one. It's just, it might be a little, but you know, if you guys, instead of wanting to stop, if you want to pick up bagels and just munch on those on the way home, which, you know, you get them out nice and hot on a Sunday morning, it's hard to beat.
Oh man, sounds amazing. Montreal bagels, baby.
And actually where you are, if you want late night eats after the game, you are right near Chinatown. So you can go to Chinatown where there's tons of restaurants.
Yeah, that'd be fun. Late. Yeah, this is like, you know, these are a couple country mouse hitting the big city. You Montrealers are, your big city ways frighten and confuse us. We're just a couple of small-minded cavemen from the hills of Vermont.
Actually, I have a question. I used to go to Vermont when me and my wife were still dating. We used to go around Christmas time.
Yep.
And we stumbled upon this place when, you know, you're driving around trying to find something to eat. And we're both kind of hungry and, you know, you kind of are bickering because you're both hungry.
Yeah, oh, I know
that.
You can't
decide what you want.
Yeah.
And we ran by this place called the Essex Grill. Have you ever been there?
Oh, yeah, I know where that is. That's an interesting little area. Like, they're trying to sort of build it up a little bit more. Like, there wasn't a lot there. It's kind of like in the fields, right? And then this spot is, it's a nice little spot. I think there's it's not a resort exactly, but there's like a nice hotel not far from there. You had some good food, huh?
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's nothing complicated, but I don't know if it was just the memory of one of those things where like, we just were starving and we just kind of were like, we saw it and like, we're just going to go here.
Well, if you're ever down in sort of Stowe, Waterbury area, which is, I mean, an hour down the road from the border, you want to hit a place called Prohibition Pig.
Good name.
Yeah, it's a fantastic spot. All local meat, tons of brews, great vibe. It's you get a little bit of the ski. Waterbury's, you know, 40 minutes from Stowe, but you will get some of the travelers who stay in Waterbury and drive up to Stowe for skiing because Stowe gets crazy expensive with all that stuff. But that's definitely a place to hit. And then the fanciest spot in central Vermont is called Head of the Wood. And Head of the Wood is on the Stowe Road between Waterbury and Stowe. And those are two definitely good spots. And then you sort of just, you know, you take your chances. But neither of those places serve poutine with shredded cheese. So you're already doing better than most spots.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember where I saw it, where someone was serving poutine and they were putting like Tex-Mex on top. I was like, oh God.
But
it was just, anyway,
I just see all this stuff about like lobster poutine and like, everyone's sort of getting funky with it. But, I'm definitely excited. I think I'm going to have to like fast for 48 hours before,
at least,
just so like, I mean, my body can handle it, you know what I mean?
Well, the tricky thing about poutine, I mean, there's actually a really good place near where I live, but I mean, I wouldn't ask you to come out, it just doesn't make sense time wise for you, it would ruin your day.
Got you.
That actually does it pretty good, and it's a case clip, it's called La Roulette. It's like one little hot dog shack that's been there for forever.
I love those spots.
If you ever, you're like Jeff, like if you ever going to like Mont Tremblant or anything with your family, like those are the places to usually stop at because they usually have the best that stuff. But this one, like you get a poutine and you know you can get like your two hot dogs with the poutine, and the poutine they give you with the like their combo is like ridiculous. It's a meal itself. It's so big, and like they do like the, I don't know, we call it like a pro thing. It's right. They give you fries, cheese, gravy, and then fries, cheese. It's a double layer, so you get cheese in the middle and gravy everywhere, so you don't just have it sitting on the top. and you get it takeout, it's on this, like, styrofoam. Anyway, it's so good, but it's so heavy. And, like, it's kind of like having Thanksgiving where it'll put you down. You get it finished, you're just like, okay, I need a minute. I'm just going to sit on this over here and, like, contemplate.
But honestly, this is why the pregame nap is so essential. You just really got to, like, ease into your evening and then, you know, start again with a couple of bevvies and get in the right mind frame for the game. So I'm pretty excited. I'm pretty excited.
You should be. I mean, it's a good game with a good, you know, good team, which is always fun. And I know you guys are probably going to want to have some bevvies at the game, but yeah, like I said, the Bell Center, it's not cheap. So just keep it in mind. I mean, you know, last time I was there, I didn't really eat anything. I never usually do, but you just look at concessions and it's like, you got like a combo with like two hot dogs, a bag of chips and a pop. And it's like $25.
Yeah. I mean, look, we're spending American money. So like we feel like we have a discount.
Oh, there you go. It's just funny money.
Rub that in. Right. But I do. There's no way we're going to get away from it. But the problem for me in drinking too much beer at the game is that then you got to deal with the bathroom situation. And then it's like you're up and down out of the seats. And like, I don't really, I don't know. It's weird. In my old age, I the beer is less interesting to me than it ever was.
Yeah, it also bloats you too. So if you're going to be having puts-ins and beer, oof. Well, no, I'm just – even everything. I'm just – you know, if people want to have drinks, it's the Bell Center, it's – unfortunately, it's not cheap.
Hey, man, we got to line Jeff Molson's pockets, man.
They're struggling.
That new development's not going to pay for itself. Oh, wait. Yes, it will pay for itself and 20% over. So I don't know. Anyway. Hey, well, listen, Connor, I do appreciate all the advice. And let me just say for our listeners, you know, if you need advice about food options in Montreal, Connor is your guy.
Apparently.
So we're are you with me on the Blues? Are the Habs going to beat the Blues on next Saturday night?
I'd like to, yeah. Yes. You know what? Yes. I want you to have as good a time as you possibly can.
That's my man. I appreciate it. That's great.
There you go.
So we will be back with you next week.
At some point
to recap the week.
Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving kind of puts a weird thing with our schedule. Plus, you're traveling, so we'll figure it out. But we'll have something for you early next. Well, Monday, Tuesday. We'll try and do it Sunday. But if people are busy, then we'll try and do it maybe a bit later. But
okay.
We'll let you know exactly.
Yeah, well, just being honest, we're getting back in we're getting back in the swing of things. So that's the other thing about all this stuff. And thanks again for listening. And hopefully you've had all your preconceptions about the Montreal Canadiens validated because someone else has told you them. And if we've missed anything, hopefully you'll let us know. Reach out on Twitter. Our addresses are in the show notes.
Yeah, I'd like to reiterate, thanks for listening. And if you have any food recommendations for Johannes while he's in Montreal with his buddies, hit us up on Twitter. Again, you know, they are in the show notes, the Twitter handle. So, you know, everyone likes food recommendations. So it's good to get a good old best puts in Montreal debate.
Oh, that's great. I love that idea. People
are very, very passionate about where they get their puts in.
So until then, Connor, keep your stick on the ice, will ya?
Yeah. Yeah, will do. Take care.
Bye.
And enjoy the game and enjoy your puts in.
Thanks, brother.
Take care.
This has been the Last Word on Habs podcast, brought to you by the Last Word on Sports Network. Join us next week. Until then, see you on the ice.